Hello and welcome to the Evidence-Based Medicine Podcast. I'm Daniel Aronoff and today we're going live to the GP17 conference where I recorded my presentation called The Lipid Hypothesis, Fact or Fiction. Basically, we try to answer the question, do abnormal blood cholesterol levels cause cardiovascular disease? Like, does high LDL and low HDL actually cause cardiovascular disease? Or is it just an association? If it's a causal relationship, then improving cholesterol levels should reduce cardiovascular disease. So this episode will go through the evidence in depth to try and answer this question. It goes for a bit longer than our usual episodes, about an hour. But to keep you interested, I'll just let you know that when I asked the audience at the start of the presentation if they believed the lipid hypothesis was true, about 90% of them put up their hands to say that they did. But when I asked them the same question at the end, after I presented all the evidence, only about 2% said that they thought the lipid hypothesis was true. Oh, and the talk may make a bit more sense with the slides, so if you want to see the whole talk with the slides, you'll find it on my YouTube channel. It's www.youtube.com/DrDanMD, DrDanMD. It'll be up there sometime over the next week or so. All right, hope you enjoy. Thank you all for coming to this talk. So today we're going to be talking about the lipid hypothesis. So what is the lipid hypothesis? Well, the lipid hypothesis is the question of, does high cholesterol cause cardiovascular disease? So is it just an association or does it cause cardiovascular disease? And the opposite of that being, by reducing cholesterol, do we therefore reduce cardiovascular disease? So why is this question important? Well, there are two main reasons why this is a very important question. Here's reason number one.
Hi, Dr. Daniel Aronoff. I was hoping to have a minute of your time to tell you about this amazing new cholesterol-lowering drug that we've got.
I'm a bit busy at the moment. Can't you see I'm presenting?
What's that? Anyway, come have some sandwiches and I'll tell you all about it. I've got beef, chicken, cheese, tuna, and sushi.
Yeah, all right. Hey, not bad.
So have you heard about this new cholesterol-lowering drug? All the best specialists are already using it.
Yeah, right. Look, before we go any further, no offence, but I thought drug reps were supposed to be good-looking.
Well, they just usually one of the requirements, but I had a connection in the industry.
Yeah, right. So tell me about this wonderful, new, fantastic cholesterol-lowering medication then.
Aha. Well, as you can clearly see from this graph, this new drug lowers LDL by 50% and increases HDL at the same time. Isn't that great? Are you hitting all your LDL targets?
Yeah, okay, but what does it do for, like, patient-oriented outcomes, like cardiovascular disease?
Cardiovascular disease? Why would you want to know anything about that? Look, cholesterol is bad, and this drug punches cholesterol in the face. Here, take some pamphlets, and I'll give you some free samples as well. That way your patients won't need to pay a cent.
Yeah, but what will they have to pay once the samples run out?
Well, then it's just $1,000 a month. But hey, that's taxpayers' money, right? Do you need any Cialis?
Hey. Reason number two why we need to find out whether the lipid hypothesis is true.
Oh, hey, Doc. Thanks for seeing me on such short notice.
Yeah, no worries.
Hey, are you that Dr. Dan guy?
Yeah.
I love Dr. Dan. Your videos are amazing. I tell all my friends to watch them. In fact, if anyone's listening in on our conversation right now, they should go and subscribe to your YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/DrDanMD. That's DrDanMD.
Listen, this consult is completely confidential. No one is listening in on our conversation. Now, what's brought you in today?
Well, before we start, can I ask you something?
Yeah?
Are you on that Facebook group, GPs Down Under?
Yeah, why?
Good. I've just heard the doctors on that group are much better doctors.
Oh, really? I'm also on ShareGP.
What the hell is that?
Never mind. Anyway, what's brought you in today?
Well, I've just come to check my cholesterol levels. See, my usual doctor tells me that my cholesterol's really high, and he wants me to go on that medication to help lower my cholesterol, but I hate taking tablets. So I've been eating like proactive margarine all the time, and I've been having those cholesterol-lowering Weet-Bix every morning. So what's my cholesterol level?
Okay, let me just check. Well, actually, it's much better. Well done.
Yes, so that means I'm much less likely to have a heart attack, right?
Ah, well, that's exactly what we're going to figure out over the next hour. Okay, so can I just get a show of hands? Who thinks the cholesterol hypothesis is true? High cholesterol causes cardiovascular disease.
Which cholesterol?
LDL. Okay. And who thinks it's not true? All right. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through the evidence, medicine's relationship with cholesterol, and we're going to establish an entire timeline of evidence starting with 1977, when this was the number one song of the year.
I had to let it happen. I had to change. Couldn't stay all my life.
Does anyone know who that was and what the song was?
Don't Cry
For Me, Argentina. Who's the artist? Julie Covington. Come see me after, you'll get a statin. Okay, so yes, that was...
Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is I never left you.
But 1977 wasn't only when Don't Cry For Me, Argentina was the number one song. It was also when data from the Framingham study first got published about the different lipid levels. So the Framingham Heart Study was a huge endeavor that started in 1949. It was instituted by the government in the US. Basically, there was a crisis. Cardiovascular disease was the new epidemic, and they wanted to figure out what was causing it. And especially, it was gaining popularity because the president at the time had died of cardiovascular disease. So they commissioned this cohort study that took about 5,500 people from a town in America called Framingham and followed them up indefinitely. In fact, they're still following them up now. And every 2 years, they'd meet with them, take their blood pressure, take their cholesterol, take, you know, every single blood test they basically knew about at the time, and ask them a bunch of questions. So it was in 1971 when they published that LDL is associated with cardiovascular disease. And it was in 1977 when they found that HDL was inversely associated. In other words, it was protective for cardiovascular disease. And this is the result that they published in 1977. And as you can see, the worse your lipid profile, the higher your chance of cardiovascular disease. But, here's the big but, the Framingham data showed that while the association was very strong in the age of 40, as you went to 50, to 60, to 70, the association tended to decrease. And by the age of 80, there was no longer association. So in the elderly, in fact, according to the Framingham data, it seemed to appear that higher cholesterol seemed to be protective. So that's one little caveat of the Framingham data. Now, just to give you the full gamut of all the observational research we had before 1977, let's start with our man, Virchow. You may remember him from such Virchows as Virchow's triad and Virchow's node. So he was around in 1856, and he was the first to look in atheromatous plaques in arteries under the microscope and publish on them. And he found that cholesterol was a big factor in these plaques. Interestingly, he did not blame the circulating lipid levels. He blamed inflammation. The softening manifests itself even in the arteries, not as a consequence of a really fatty process, but as a direct product of inflammation. So for the 100 years that followed him, we sort of were of the belief that it was the circulating lipid levels that contributed to atheroma, and now we're moving back to this, well, maybe it's inflammation that's causing it. Then in 1914, a Russian guy by the name of Nikolai Anichkow fed rabbits cholesterol and then dissected them and looked in their arteries. And he found that the more cholesterol he gave them, mainly in egg yolks, the more atheroma they developed in their arteries. And it was directly proportional. So Again, a really good association for the lipid hypothesis. But there is other data that other animals, such as dogs, lions, and cats, don't have that association. So a study which fed dogs 200 times the human average consumption of cholesterol levels couldn't find that it increased any amount of atheroma. So the best thinkers say that for herbivores, they are susceptible to cholesterol in their diet, contributing to atheromatous disease, but carnivores don't seem to be. And then another really big push in the evidence was in 1973, when Michael Brown and Joseph Goldstein discovered the cause of familial hypercholesterolemia, being a mutation in the LDL receptor. So here, and they won the Nobel Prize for this. So here, we have a mutation in the LDL receptor, we have very high circulating LDL cholesterol, and we have like 10 times the risk of cardiovascular disease, all very much supporting the notion of the lipid hypothesis. So, Framingham Heart Study, does it support the lipid hypothesis? Yes, we're going to give that a tick. Now let's move on to 1984, which was an awesome year, because I was born, and because this was the number one song of the year. Does anyone know the name of that song? When Doves Cry by? Prince. You get a vibrate. He was formerly known as Prince at the time. Yes, so 1984 was when this was the number one song, but it's also when we got our first evidence that lowering cholesterol reduces cardiovascular disease with a medication called cholestyramine. So in 1984, a trial called the Coronary Primary Prevention Trial came out. This was the first trial to show that lowering cholesterol reduced cardiovascular disease through cholestyramine, and it was the third ever trial to assess what happens to lowering cholesterol on cardiovascular disease. We're going to talk about the other two a bit later. So 1984, basically, they wanted to figure out whether lowering cholesterol reduces cardiovascular disease. They took 3,500 men with hypercholesterolemia. They only took men because at this stage in evidence-based medicine, women were excluded from studies. It's a bit sad. But in their defense, they say it was because women were at much lower risk of cardiovascular disease, so they wouldn't just get the numbers to make it statistically significant. So they randomized them to placebo or cholestyramine. They followed them up for 7.5 years, and they found good outcomes with lipids. So they found a 21% reduction in LDL, a 3% increase in HDL, and in terms of clinical outcomes, they found a 19% relative reduction in cardiovascular disease. So it went from 8.6% to 7%. But they didn't show any change in mortality. But still, we first had the Framingham and all the observational data showing that high cholesterol is associated with cardiovascular disease, and now we had our first ever study showing that if you lower cholesterol, you reduce cardiovascular disease. So I would say that is a big victory for the lipid hypothesis, and we're going to give that a tick. Okay, moving on to 1987, when this was the number one song. Everybody's doing the dance now. Come on. Who knows that song? Do the Locomotion by who? Ah, oh, statins for everyone. So yes, that was Kylie Minogue. With Do the Locomotion. But it is also when the first statin came to market. So in 1967, lovastatin was approved by the FDA. That was manufactured by Merck. Then came simvastatin in 1992, also manufactured by Merck. And then atorvastatin came in 1999 and then basically demolished the market share. So they, atorvastatin, were making $15 billion a year alone, just them on statins. So now the FDA approved it because we now were very worried about cardiovascular disease, and this was the best theory we had. We had evidence number one that high cholesterol is associated with cardiovascular disease. Now we had through cholestyramine that lowering your cholesterol reduces cardiovascular disease. So the FDA would approve anything that could show that it would lower cholesterol. They didn't ask for any cardiovascular data. So it wasn't until 1994 that the first ever study assessing statins on cardiovascular disease came out. It was called the 4S study, or the Scandinavian Simvastatin Survival Study. And they took 4,500 patients with coronary artery disease and elevated cholesterol levels, and they randomized them to 20 milligrams of simvastatin or placebo. Now, they stopped the trial after an average of 5.5 years, and they found great benefits on lipid levels, as we all know. 28% decrease in total cholesterol, 38% decrease in LDL, 8% increase in HDL, and a 15% decrease in triglycerides. But what did they find on clinical outcomes? Well, they found a 30% reduction in mortality. So it went from 12% to 8%, but they also showed a 34% relative reduction in major coronary events. So this was a huge victory for statins and a huge victory for the lipid hypothesis. Now, this wasn't the only study. There's been, I think, a systematic review found over 100 studies on statins for cardiovascular disease. This is the Cochrane review on all the trials that assessed statins in primary prevention. So as you can see, this is the line of no effect. This is all the studies. And all the dots represent whether it reduced cardiovascular disease or increased cardiovascular disease. If it's on the left of the line, it means that it reduced cardiovascular disease. And I think we can all agree that the majority of the studies are showing that statins reduce cardiovascular disease. This diamond here is the average of all of the trials. And there again, it's clearly on the side of benefit, showing that it reduces cardiovascular disease. And the reduction is by about 25%, which has been consistent through all the systematic reviews and all the trials. That statins at sort of low to moderate intensity reduce cardiovascular disease by 25%. Now, they also showed a benefit in mortality for primary prevention. Okay, again, you can see that the diamond, the average of all the studies, was on the left side of the curve, showing that it reduced mortality. And that's important because we're going to talk about other drugs that may not. But, and here's the big but with statins and our whole question of the lipid hypothesis. Because this reduction in cardiovascular disease occurred no matter what your starting LDL was. Okay, so if your starting LDL is 8, or if your starting LDL is 2, the benefit from statins is the same. You still get this 25% reduction in cardiovascular disease. So just to give an example, if we're taking blood pressure to compare, if your starting blood pressure is 200 systolic, you're going to get a much greater benefit for your cardiovascular disease than if your starting blood pressure was 140. Can you see that? That rule doesn't apply to statins. Whatever your starting cholesterol is, the reduction that you get is consistently this 25%. So this study particularly looked at it. It was one of the largest ever studies on statins, 20,000 people. It's called the Heart Protection Study. And they broke down their results based on what the initial LDL or different cholesterol levels were. So if you look here, if the total cholesterol was less than 5, was between 5 and 6, or greater than 6, it was all pretty much the same result. Same as LDL. If it was less than 3 or greater than 3.5, all pretty much the same results. All again, that 25% reduction. Okay, and the same with HDL. And all the studies that have tried to compare this, break down the results based on what the starting LDL was, have shown the same thing. But also, the improvement in cardiovascular disease that you get from statins is the same regardless of how well it reduces your cholesterol, right? So let's go again to blood pressure. If I can give you a tablet that reduces your blood pressure from 200 down to 120, that's going to be much better for your cardiovascular disease than if the same drug reduces your blood pressure from 200 down to 180. Can you see that? The same isn't true of statins. So if a statin reduces your cholesterol from 5 to 4, the evidence suggests that you still get a 25% reduction, and if your cholesterol is reduced from 5 to 2, you still get that 25% reduction. So again, the Heart Protection Study looked at it, and they split up their results based on the amount of LDL reduction that there was. So here was less than 38% LDL reduction, and here was greater than 50% LDL reduction, and it was always about this 25% reduction. So there are two caveats about statins and our whole lipid hypothesis. But otherwise, statins absolutely support the lipid hypothesis. You lower cholesterol and you lower cardiovascular disease. So big tick there. All right, now we're moving on. So now I'm gonna play you some songs and you have to guess the year. And you get double points if you can name all six songs.
Everybody, yeah. I get no.
Okay, who can guess the year?
1997.
1997, yes. Okay, who can name the songs? Backstreet Boys was number one. Chumbawamba was number two. Does anyone know the name of the song? Very good. Number three was? Was the Verve Bittersweet Symphony. Song number four? Mbop by Hanson. Song number five? Candle in the Wind. And song number six? Yeah, well done. Okay, so what else happened in 1997 was that the first ever randomized controlled trial on any diet intervention published data on outcomes on cardiovascular disease. And that was for the Mediterranean diet. And it was called the Lion Diet Heart Study. Now, just by way of background, 99.999% of nutrition research is basically get a group of people, ask them what they eat, and then ask them if they've had heart disease, if they've had this, if they've had that, if they've had cancer. Okay, that's pretty much the worst level of evidence you can get. There's a small percentage of diet studies that will take a diet history and then follow them up as a cohort for about 10 years and then see whether who gets cardiovascular disease, who gets cancer. That's the next least worst evidence, right? But the best is a randomized controlled trial, but that's pretty hard to do. Imagine if I told you guys, you're not allowed to drink coffee for 5 years. And you guys, you have to drink coffee 5 times a day for 5 years every single day. So it's very difficult feat, which is why we just don't have that many randomized controlled trials. But this is one of them. It was called the Lion Diet Heart Study. So it was a really big study, as you can imagine, and they were publishing data between 1994 and 1999. I chose 1997 because the music was really good and because it was smack bang right in the middle. So they took 605 post-myocardial infarction patients and they randomized them to what was the American Heart Association diet, which is unfortunately still, and it's also very similar to our current guideline diet, versus the Mediterranean diet. And they followed them up for an average of 46 months and they found a massive reduction in cardiovascular disease, a 70% relative reduction. We've never seen anything like that with any intervention, with excess, nothing before like that. It went from 15.4% to 4.6%. Now, studies before the last decade or so didn't have the, you know, the most rigorous of policies and procedures to make them accurate and free of bias. So that's probably an over-exaggeration. There was another study called the PREDIMED study, which was assessing the Mediterranean diet in primary prevention, and that showed a relative reduction of about 30%. That's probably a bit more accurate. But still, the Mediterranean diet reduces cardiovascular disease over the low-fat diet. The evidence is clear. Now, here's the important thing. It did not affect cholesterol levels, okay? So we recommend diets because we want to see improvements in cholesterol levels. Imagine if these guys had come back to you in 6 months and there was no change in the LDL, no change in the HDL, and you said, well, there's no point keeping the diet. It's clearly not working in you. The diet is working. Whatever happens to your blood pressure, whatever happens to your LDL, whatever happens to your HDL, the diet is working just by being on it, independent of what happens to your cholesterol levels. The reason why I want to put that in is because it shows that the Mediterranean diet, which didn't alter cholesterol levels, is better for cardiovascular outcomes compared to the diet that we recommend to improve lipid levels. So does that, I mean, it's not, It's not strictly speaking part of our talk today. It doesn't really support or dispute it, but it's still not in favour of the lipid hypothesis, so we're going to get our first cross there. All right, 2002. Who can guess the number one song? Does anyone remember that song? Does anyone remember the name of the song? The Ketchup song. And the name of the band? Huh? Yes. Okay. So that was in 2002, which is also when we had data on estrogen. So a lot of you might not know this, but estrogen actually really improves our lipid profile. Okay, 2002 was when the Women's Heart Initiative study, came out with their results on what happens when you give women HRT. But let's go a bit before, back in time, to the first ever randomized controlled trial on cardiovascular outcomes in lowering cholesterol. It was called the Coronary Drug Project. This was the number one song of the year. And this is what studies used to look like when they wrote them up. So, pretty ancient, old school. You can just imagine someone drawing it with a ruler. So pretty old school, 1975, a different era in evidence-based medicine. But this came at a time, again, when we were desperate to figure out what was causing cardiovascular disease. And we had a good inkling now from Framingham data and all the other observational data that I mentioned that cholesterol might play a role. So this was a government-initiated study to see what happens when we lower cholesterol. It was the first one of its kind. And they took every single agent that they knew that would lower cholesterol. And there were four at the time. And one of them was estrogen. Okay, so they took 8,500 men, I'm sorry, who had just had a myocardial infarction, and they randomized them to six groups. Now, you might not know this also, but they used to give estrogen to men to prevent cardiovascular disease. The reason being is we had a very good mechanism of action, right? Women are protected from cardiovascular disease, then they hit menopause, and then their level of risk matches that of men. So clearly, what happens at menopause? Well, estrogen and progesterone go away. So that must be the answer for everything. So they used to give men estrogen to prevent cardiovascular disease up until this trial. So one group got 2.5 milligrams of estrogen. The other group got 5 milligrams of estrogen. Now, just to put in perspective, for HRT, we give women about 0.5 milligrams of estrogen. So this is 5 to 10 times the dose of estrogen. The third group got dextrothyroxine. So thyroid hormone, thyroxine, also improves lipid levels. Okay? We also gave them a fibrate, clofibrate, and niacin. So these were the five things that we knew of at the time that lowered cholesterol levels. And then we matched them with placebo. Now, the estrogen and the dextrothyroxine arm was stopped early due to increased cardiovascular disease. For estrogen, there was a 20% relative increase in cardiovascular disease, despite improving cholesterol levels. Now, we never gave estrogen again to men, but we seemed to forget about this, and then in the 80s and 90s, gave it to every single woman as they turned 50, and then indefinitely until they died. So HRT was the number one prescribed medication in America every single year during the 90s. That's 10 years in a row. It was the number one prescribed medication. And when you consider the fact that you're only dealing with half the population, because they're women, and you're only dealing with those over 50, so you're dealing really with a minor cohort of population, and yet it was the number one prescribed medication until the Women's Health Initiative came out. It was basically given to prevent cardiovascular disease and to prevent chronic illness. So even if you didn't have menopausal symptoms, you would still be put on hormone therapy until this Women's Health Initiative came and broke the internet, or at the time it was broke the newsstands. So they took, in fact, the Women's Health Initiative enrolled about 160,000 women in menopausal age. And they were assessing sort of three things. One was HRT, one was bone health with calcium and vitamin D, and the third was low-fat versus normal-fat diet. And guess what they showed? They showed absolutely no difference. They showed a reduction in cholesterol with the low-fat diet, but no difference on cardiovascular outcomes. Okay, so the intended follow-up was for 9 years in the HRT component of the trial, but they stopped it early after 6.8 years due to harms. So the results on lipid levels were quite good. 13% decrease in LDL, 7% increase in HDL. And based on this, and based on all the data from Framingham and from statins and from cholestyramine, they were expecting a 20 to 30% decrease in cardiovascular disease. But they didn't find it. In fact, in the estrogen and progesterone arm, there was a 30% relative increase in cardiovascular disease. There was a 35% increase in stroke, and there was a 200% increased risk of pulmonary embolism. So, estrogen improves cholesterol, doesn't improve cardiovascular disease. Now, by the way, other data has come out since then. We now know that estrogen and progesterone, yes, increases cardiovascular disease. Estrogen alone, it's a bit more controversial. Some data says that it's only if you use estrogen for more than 10 years. Other data suggests, no, it occurs no matter how often you use it. So it's a bit more controversial, but the point is clear. Yes, it improves lipid profile, but no, it does not improve cardiovascular disease. So that is getting a cross. Let's move on. Oh, we should also give thyroxine a cross because that did not improve cardiovascular outcomes either. Okay, guess the year again. Umbrella, yes, that's the name of the song. What was the year? 2007. Okay, which is when a drug that you've probably never heard of before came and failed, all within a couple of years. So torcetrabib or torsetrabib, has anyone even heard of that? It was never approved in Australia, never improved in America, really never approved anywhere in the world, but it was the biggest hope for cholesterol lowering. There had been no drug or no intervention in the history of the world so far when torsetrabib came out that was able to improve lipids as much as this drug. In fact, the CEO of Pfizer, who was manufacturing this medication, said this will be one of the most important compounds of our generation in 2006, right? But in 2007, when the Illuminate study got published, which was the big randomized controlled trial that tried to assess its impact on cardiovascular outcomes, he wasn't so happy. They took 15,000 patients with cardiovascular disease, randomized them to a statin and torsetrabib, or atorvastatin only, and it was stopped early after only 1.5 years of average follow-up. Lipid results were amazing. This is on top of a statin. It reduced LDL by 25% and increased HDL by 72%. So if your patient's HDL is 1, this would take it to 1.7. Okay? Really amazing on lipid levels. But for cardiovascular results, 25% increase in cardiovascular disease and a 60% increase in mortality. So this drug was obviously pulled out of, you know, the manufacturing pipeline. So torcetrabib does wonders to cholesterol levels, but makes mortality and cardiovascular disease worse. So we're giving that a cross. Okay, we're going to do another guess the year. Don't stop, hip-hop, DJ Mama's music. TikTok, what was the year? 2010. Okay, and who was the name of the artist? Kesha. Very good. Wow, very astute with pop culture. Well done. Okay, so in 2010 was when we had the totality of the evidence on fibrates. The last study that we have now on fibrates and cardiovascular disease came out in 2010. Now, this is the totality of the evidence for fibrates. This is every single trial that has looked at fibrates in terms of anything but cholesterol levels, so other cardiovascular outcomes. Let's start with 1975, with what we've already mentioned, the Coronary Drug Project. So this was this trial, in case you can't remember. The one where they randomized to estrogen and all those other ones. So they also had a fibrate arm, and it was clofibrate. They showed a 10% decrease in total cholesterol. Now, they were only measuring total cholesterol then because it wasn't until 1977 that the Framingham had published its data on HDL cholesterol. So everyone was just looking at total cholesterol. No one was doing fractions until after 1977. They showed no difference in coronary heart disease or mortality and a doubling of the rate of cholelithiasis. Now, I'm mentioning that. There was other side effects as well. I'm mentioning that for a specific purpose, which we're going to get to. So no good for fibrates, the coronary drug project. The WHO trial, again, the World Health Organization was very astutely aware of this epidemic of cardiovascular disease, and they wanted to figure out a way to stop it. So they assessed lowering cholesterol with fibrates on cardiovascular disease and published in 1978. It's called the WHO trial. They took 10,500 men. 10%, they showed a 10% reduction in total cholesterol, and they showed an 18% reduction in cardiovascular disease, but a 16% increase in mortality. So yes, I can lower your cholesterol and I can reduce your chance of getting a heart attack, but you get that same reduction back in increase in mortality. So no, no. Oh, and there's also a 250% increase in cholecystectomies. So no for the WHO trial. Next was the Helsinki Heart Study. And while those two used clofibrate, these next two used Gemfibrozil, which is available in Australia. So the Helsinki Heart Study took 4,000 men with dyslipidemia. It was primary prevention, so they didn't have cardiovascular disease, and they followed them up for 5 years. The lipid results were good. Total cholesterol decreased by 11%, LDL by 10%, and HDL increased by 10%. Triglycerides, and this is what fibrates are amazing at, reducing triglycerides, usually between 30 to 50%, and here they reduced it by 43%. But what about the clinical outcomes? Well, also good. 34% decrease in coronary heart disease, but no change in mortality, but still good. And by the way, an increase in GI surgeries, most of which were cholecystectomies. Okay, Helsinki Heart Study gets the tick of approval. VA HIT trial, 2,500 patients with low LDL, HDL, sorry, followed for 5 years, randomized to Gemfibrozil or placebo, 22% reduction in fatal or non-fatal myocardial infarctions, 25% reduction in stroke. So well done for the VA HIT trial. That's another tick. The BIP trial was for a medication that we don't have in Australia called bezafibrate. They took 3,090 patients with cardiovascular disease and low HDL and followed them up for 6.2 years. No difference in CVD or mortality. No difference in cardiovascular disease or mortality. So a no for the BIP trial. Now, these by far are the best two studies. As again, as I mentioned, as our ability to conduct studies with minimal bias improved over the decades, these two really shine out in terms of their study design and their minimization of bias. So the field study was done in 2005, and it was done in Sydney, Australia. So they took 10,000 patients with type 2 diabetes and not on a statin and randomized them to fenofibrate, which is Lipidil, or placebo for 5 years. The lipid results were good. Again, 11% reduction in total cholesterol, 12% reduction in LDL, 5% increase in HDL, and reduction of triglycerides by 29%. Now, the clinical outcomes, fatal or non-fatal myocardial infarction, no significant difference. There was a slight difference. It went from 6% to 5%, but the p-value was 0.16. Now, in the author's conclusion, they mention that there was a trend towards improved cardiovascular disease, but they have no mention of this exact same trend for increase in death, which had the exact same p-value, and it was increased by almost the exact same way. So it went from 6.59% to 7.23%. And this is amazing, 37% increase in pancreatitis. The reason why it's amazing is because of this. Triglyceride levels greater than 10 millimoles per liter pose a risk of pancreatitis and should be treated with fenofibrate. That's our current guidelines, which is remarkable. And I've read this entire document and they have no real evidence to justify this. I think it's become our obsession with treating numbers that sort of is able to even defy logic. So every single study I've showed you that has looked at this so far showed that it was worse for biliary stone disease and for pancreatitis, and yet we still need to lower those triglycerides, don't we? Okay, so that's a no for the field study. Next was the ACCORD lipid study, which was done in 2010. So the ACCORD study, it was a giant study in diabetics that wanted to look at whether tight glycemic control was better than sort of less tight glycemic control. But they had an arm for just lipids, and it was called the ACCORD lipid arm of the ACCORD trial. They took 5,500 patients with diabetes and you could either have cardiovascular disease or not, and they followed them for 5 years. And they gave them simvastatin plus fenofibrate versus simvastatin alone, and there was no impact on cardiovascular outcomes or death. So that's a no for the ACCORD study. So what do we think of fibrates? Support the lipid hypothesis or not? This is a choose your own adventure, by the way. My slides will change based on what you vote. So you're voting no? Okay, so put a cross there. Okay. What year was this song? It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sometimes she's 2014. Okay, and 2014 was when all the data on niacin came out. So does anyone use niacin to lower cholesterol? It's not popular here at all. The PBS never approved it for cholesterol lowering. In America, the FDA has approved it, and it's used half as much as statins, or it was in 2009. Now, given that statins are used incredibly widely in America, this is huge. So there have been 3 trials assessing niacin on cardiovascular outcomes. The first we already know very much about. It's this one. Philadelphia Breed. Okay, they had 15 years of follow-up in this arm. There was a 10% reduction in total cholesterol, and they did show a 37% reduction in cardiovascular disease, including an 11% reduction in mortality. So good for niacin, but this was a really old study. Methodology back then was very not legit, if you will. So what do more modern studies show? So the AIM-HI trial came in 2011, took 3,400 patients with cardiovascular disease, randomized them to simvastatin plus niacin versus simvastatin alone, and she showed all good things for lipid levels, but cardiovascular outcomes, no difference in cardiovascular disease, and a non-statistically significant increase in stroke. Right, so it went from 1.1% to 1.7%. The p-value was 0.11, which basically means that there's a 90% chance that's true. Okay, niacin. The third study and the most decisive one, the biggest one, was the HSP2. Don't ask me where they get these acronyms from. Anyway, this was the HSP2 Thrive study, published in 2014. They took 26,000 patients with cardiovascular disease, which is still one of the biggest cardiovascular trials conducted. And they randomized them to placebo or niacin. And this medication, lorcaprevir, if there's any pharmacist, you can punch me in the face later for pronouncing that incorrectly. Basically, it doesn't do anything to cholesterol or cardiovascular disease. All it does is reduce flushing. So the biggest problem with niacin is flushing, which is 2 problems. One is patients stop taking it. And 2 is you know whether you're on the intervention or placebo, right? So it minimizes blinding. So they give them this medication to reduce the flushing and to avoid those 2 biases. Everyone was taking simvastatin. So this trial was amazing. What they did was everyone was obviously on a different statin. They got everyone to stop their statin and then started everyone on the same dose of simvastatin. So that way they could control for everything except for the niacin. But it was stopped early after 3.9 years of follow-up. Results on lipids were good, 15% reduction in LDL on top of statins, 14% increase in HDL, but no improvement in cardiovascular disease and an increase in mortality that was statistically significant, well, borderline statistically significant, 0.08. So it went from 5.7% to 6.2%. They also did a subgroup analysis on patients with higher starting LDLs or lower starting HDLs and found no difference. So what are we giving for niacin? No, we're giving it a cross. Okay, now 2015. What song is that? Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars and? Actually, it's featuring Bruno, yeah, Mark Ronson. Okay. Don't believe me, just watch. Okay. Also, ezetimibe or Vytorin or all the other names, Zetia. So we now have the totality of data on ezetimibe, which was the last study being published in 2015. So this is every single study ever published on ezetimibe looking at cardiovascular outcomes. Let's quickly go through each. Am I killing you with all this? Okay, I'm sorry. I'll rush through this. Okay, so the ENHANCE trial in 2008 took 720 patients with familial hypercholesterolemia. By the way, ezetimibe was approved by the FDA and in Australia in 2002. They didn't have any outcomes on cardiovascular disease, just the fact that they were able to improve lipid levels. So 2008 was the first trial that assessed cardiovascular disease. They did statin plus ezetimibe versus statin alone, but their main outcome was carotid intimal thickening, right? So if there's more atheroma in your arteries, the artery walls will be thicker, and that's another surrogate marker for cardiovascular disease. What did they find? It was actually thicker with ezetimibe compared to statin alone, and there was no difference in cardiovascular disease. So no for the ENHANCE trial. The SEAS trial was next in 2009. They took 1,873 patients with aortic stenosis. They randomized them to statin and ezetimibe versus statin alone. 4.5 years of follow-up. No difference in cardiovascular or aortic valve events, which was their main outcomes. And a statistically significant increased risk of cancer in the ezetimibe group. So no for the SEAS trial. 2009 was the Arbiter 6 Holtz trial. 363 patients with cardiovascular disease. Now, here, they compared statin and ezetimibe versus statin plus niacin. And again, they were assessing the carotid intimal thickness. They showed a 70% greater reduction in LDL with ezetimibe compared to the niacin group, but they found increased carotid intimal thickening with ezetimibe and a significant increase in cardiovascular disease events with ezetimibe compared to niacin. It went from 1% to 5%. So no for the Arbiter 6 Holtz trial. Next, the SHARP trial, 2011, 9,270 patients with chronic kidney disease, 5 years of follow-up. They did find a significant reduction in cardiovascular disease. It went from 13.4% to 11.3%. But the problem is that they compared statin and ezetimibe versus nothing at all. So they compared ezetimibe plus a drug we already know improves cardiovascular disease to nothing at all. So was this reduction because of the statin entirely? Was it a little bit due to the ezetimibe, or did ezetimibe have nothing to do with it? What a waste of 9,200 patients. And this was in 10 countries and it involved 120 clinical centers. This would have cost billions of dollars, okay? And it's a complete waste because we can't make any conclusions on it. So we have to put a question mark there. Now the IMPROVE-IT trial, 2015, this hit the press, it was quite big at the time. They took 18,144 very high-risk patients. So these patients had just had a heart attack in the last 10 days. And they randomized them to statin and ezetimibe versus statin alone. And they followed them up for 7 years. Now, the lipid outcomes were good. LDL lowered by a further 24% on top of statins. But cardiovascular outcomes, no difference in mortality, and a small reduction in cardiovascular disease. It went from 34.7% to 32.7%. Now, that is of questionable clinical relevance, and I'll tell you why. Statins would have taken a baseline risk of 34.7% and reduced it to about 20 to 25%. This took it from 34.7% and took it down to 32.7%, okay? Secondly, there was a trial in statins that did exactly this design. They gave it to people with an acute coronary syndrome within the past 10 days, and they were able to show a 2% reduction in 13 weeks. This took 7 years to show a 2% reduction. Or to put it in other terms, in Australia, we start lipid-lowering agents at 15% cardiovascular risk over 5 years. A statin would reduce that to about 11% or 10%. Ezetimibe will reduce it to 14.1%, which means that you get a 0.9% reduction in cardiovascular risk if you take it every day for 5 years. All right. And again, they compared based on initial LDL levels and found no difference. So I'm going to give it a tick. Yes, it's questionable how meaningful. No evidence that it works in primary prevention, but it does lower cholesterol and it shows improvement in cardiovascular disease. So we'll give that a tick. What will we give ezetimibe overall? Who votes no? Who votes yes? Okay. I'm really glad I chose this adventure. So, 2017, we don't know what the number one song for the year is, but I have a feeling it's going to be this one. Despacito. Okay, so 2017, and you might, this hasn't really become popular yet, but there is a new cholesterol-lowering drug on the scene, and it's called, it's a PCSK9 inhibitor. Okay, it's a monoclonal antibody, and by far and away, this reduces LDL more than anything we've ever seen for a while. And we first heard about it in the literature about 5 years ago, and we've been waiting for this result to come out of this trial. It's called the Fourier trial, and it came out earlier this year. They took 27,500 patients with cardiovascular disease, and they also had to have other risk factors like smoking or diabetes. These were high-risk patients, and they had to have elevated cholesterol or LDL levels, and they had to already be on a statin. They randomized them to evolocumab or placebo and followed them up for 2 years. The lipid outcomes, brace yourself, because this is huge. LDL decreased by 60% on top of statins. So statins take your LDL down to 2. This will take it down to 1.8 on top of that, okay? Now, the cardiovascular outcomes, cardiovascular disease events were reduced by 13%. They went from 11.3% to 9.8%. But there was no difference in cardiovascular death or total death. Now, these were high-risk patients. Statins reduce death in lower-risk patients, right, in primary prevention. These were not able to reduce death in high-risk patients. And again, they looked at when you have a lot of people, you can do subset analyses. They looked to see whether the starting LDL level made any impact on the change in improvement in cardiovascular disease, and they found that there was no difference between the starting LDL. And by the way, it costs $14,500 per year. So, PCSK9, I think we're giving that a tick, right? Lowers cholesterol and improves cardiovascular disease. Yep, not as good as statins, but still does so. So what do we have so far? So we have increases in LDL and reductions in HDL is associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. We've seen that in Framingham, and we've also seen that with countless observational studies. We know that. That's true. There is an association there. But there doesn't seem to be a cholesterol level association in the elderly. The second point is the familial hypercholesterolemia patients have very high cholesterol levels and much higher rates of cardiovascular disease. Finally, cholestyramine reduces LDL and also reduces cardiovascular disease. Statins reduce cholesterol and reduce cardiovascular disease, but the improvement in the cardiovascular outcomes occur with statins regardless of the starting lipid levels. And improvement in the cardiovascular outcomes with statins occur irrespective of the amount of change on lipid levels. Estrogen improves lipid profile but does not improve cardiovascular outcomes. Torsatrabib improves lipid profile but increases cardiovascular disease and mortality. Fibrates improve lipid profile but do not improve cardiovascular disease. Niacin improves lipid profile but increases mortality. Ezetimibe improves lipid profile and questionably improves cardiovascular disease, although that is of questionable meaningfulness. And evolocumab improves lipid profile and reduces cardiovascular disease. So, I don't know if the lipid hypothesis is true, but I think when we get this in our inbox, which I got, and when we go and talk to the Weet-Bix stand here at the conference, who are trying to get us to use Weet-Bix that lower cholesterol on all of our patients, we have to now ask whether it's providing a cardiovascular benefit. So yes, thank you, Professor Peter Clifton, for showing us that Weet-Bix with plant sterols reduce cholesterol by 9%. but we need to know what it does for cardiovascular disease, because we've seen medications that reduce cholesterol and increase cardiovascular disease. We've seen medications that lower cholesterol and have no impact on cardiovascular disease, but we've also seen medications that lower cholesterol and reduce cardiovascular disease. So before I finish, can I take one last vote? Who believes the lipid hypothesis is true? And who believes it's not true? All right, any questions?
What do you believe?
Sorry? I actually don't believe one way or the other, to be honest. This is what I believe. I believe we need to scrutinize whenever someone tries to sell us something that lowers cholesterol. The FDA and the TGA need to not approve anything based on surrogate markers. By the way, the FDA has been much better. Do you guys remember Rosiglitazone? So they used to approve anything that showed it lowered HbA1c. Then post-market data on Rosiglitazone showed, it's increasing cardiovascular disease. So since then, they've made any drug that wants to lower HbA1c also prove that it doesn't make cardiovascular disease worse. But, you know, my concern is this. My concern is exactly this. That we get sold by people to give things that lower cholesterol despite not having any evidence that it improves cardiovascular outcomes. Patients get very stressed by it. You know, I hate Weet-Bix, doc. I don't care. You have to eat it, you know? Do you want to go on a statin? You better eat your Weet-Bix, okay? That's, we don't know whether it's harmful. It could be harmful.
So how does a statin reduce?
So that's the big question. We probably magic. no, look, there's a lot of theories. We're thinking that it has something to do with inflammation, something happens to do with endothelium, right? I don't know anything about endothelium, but it may have something to do with that. Basically, we got to stop. That's another important point. We've got to stop relying on mechanisms of action and seeing the data, you know? All these drugs had good mechanisms of action, but we want to see the data. Does it actually work? Okay? Any other questions?
I have a question. Thank you so much for entertaining me. That was great. So today you
should... Look, you know what it could be? It could be that there's something that causes cardiovascular disease that we don't know of that also causes raised LDL levels. So it's not the LDL that's causing the increased cardiovascular disease. It's something else that we haven't figured out that's also causing... So we're treating LDL, but really we're not... Do you know what I mean? The other thing about guidelines... I won't go into it. Yeah. Anyway. Yes. So look, industry-funded trials doesn't necessarily mean they're bad quality. In fact... Some industry-funded trials could be better quality, but they just do shifty things, like compare ezetimibe and statin to nothing at all. But if you look at the data and you read the methods carefully and completely ignore the conclusions, then you can make use of the data, definitely.
Two questions. Are you suggesting simvastatin is the new aspirin?
No, because if your risk is only 5%, it'll reduce it down... It'll reduce it by 25%, so it'll only reduce it to about 4% or whatever the maths is there. So I don't think everyone should be on it. I think we should let patients decide exactly as we learned in the presentation before. So if your risk is at 15% or as your risk is at 10%, I could give you a statin which will reduce your risk to 7.5%. Is that something that's meaningful for you? So for someone who's had a dad have a heart attack, that could be meaningful. But for someone who... You know, 2.5%, and I've got to take it every year. No, I don't want to take it. That's how I think we should be approaching statins. By offering it to the patient. Now, in secondary prevention, it's a different ballgame. In secondary prevention, your risk is now 20 to 30%, which means statins take it down to about 10 to 20%. That's a different ballgame. But for primary prevention, the benefit is, at the end of the day, there's a much higher chance the statin will do nothing for the patient, right? Even if your risk is 20%, statins will take it down to about 15%. There's still a 95% chance that statins won't do anything, right? So I think we should leave it to the patient. If it was me, I would take statins at around the 15% mark. And I think the Australian guidelines have it really good. In America, they are saying they should give statins to seven if your risk is 7.5% over 10 years. We're saying 15% over 5 years. I think Australia has a good. Yeah, any other questions?
The second one, what are you talking about the ratios?
Yeah, look... I think the ratios are very good at predicting cardiovascular risk. The question is whether changing the ratio changes cardiovascular risk, okay? The association is clear. Your ratio is this, your chance of getting cardiovascular disease is this. The question is, does changing that ratio impact on cardiovascular disease? And I think we've tried to answer that tonight. Yeah, good question. So the question was, if there's no association between cholesterol levels and cardiovascular disease in the elderly, do statins still work? Actually, we don't know, because most of the trials excluded anyone over 75, but there's been about 3 or 4 trials that did not exclude people over 75, and we're starting to get the subset analysis of just looking at those over 75. The 3 of them have showed, yes, statins still reduced by 25%. One of them just came out recently. I can't remember which one. I think it was for the ACCORD trial. They did a subset analysis of the ACCORD trial and showed there was no reduction in cardiovascular disease. My gut feeling is, yes, statins work. Statins work across everywhere. It doesn't matter what your LDL is. Doesn't matter how old you are. You know, it took until the JUPITER trial, which was, I think, 2005, to show that statins worked in women. Not because they didn't work in women until 2005, just because we needed large numbers of women in trials to show that they worked, and now we know that they work, okay?
Should you just say that advice Mediterranean diet?
I definitely think we need to start advising on the Mediterranean diet, and then don't check lipid levels, because we're not expecting the Mediterranean diet to affect lipid levels. But the benefit is remarkable. The only diet that's been, you know, tested for cardiovascular outcomes in a randomized controlled trial is the Mediterranean. It's been shown to be better than the low-fat diet. Why are we telling people to go on the low-fat diet? I don't understand. Anyway.
So what do we do? Can you comment on lipoproteins more?
Yeah, so I specifically didn't want to mention lipoproteins. There's now a new shift to say, oh, well, we're all wrong about LDLs and HDLs, and now the new favorite is lipoprotein. We're just getting ourselves into the same mess. A lot of these studies also looked at lipoproteins and CRP, if you're into CRP, right? High sensitivity CRP, and they found exactly the same picture as what I showed you before. We love to like blame it on one thing, but I just don't think the evidence works like that. Any other?
So you wouldn't do cholesterol levels after starting a statin?
That let's not go there. look, yes, what's the value of doing cholesterol levels after starting a statin? Logically, none. That's all I'll say. That was the best question yet.
For those people who take statins but their lipids don't change at all, they still also get the 25%.
Absolutely. Yep. So if you're on a statin, the value of checking your lipids is minimal. So look, now that we have good data.
Trapped in the water supply again for everybody.
Except that you might get a few liver failures, you know, the odd liver failure and a few rhabdomyolyses, but...
What about the risk
of diabetes? Yeah, so look, yeah, diabetes increases, but who cares when cardiovascular decreases? Again, you've got to choose your population. A young person with normal blood pressure and high cholesterol, whose 5-year risk is still 5%, what benefit are you giving them by giving a statin, right? The other piece of evidence I should give you is there is good evidence that higher dose statins improve cardiovascular disease, okay? So when you give 10 milligrams of atorvastatin, you reduce cardiovascular disease by 25%. And then when you increase the dose by 8 times, so you give them 80 milligrams, it reduces it now to about 35%. Again, that's all regardless of the lipid levels. And by the way, there's never ever been a trial that's assessed targeting to different lipid levels and assessing whether it's better on cardiovascular disease. Okay. That's it? Thank you, guys. I hope. I hope to see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Very entertaining.
Oh, wow. Cool. Thank you. Yes.